Okay. All right, Earl, do you want to do like an intro?
Sure.
We're here with...
Are we ready?
Yeah.
Ready to start?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Welcome to the Sports Parent Podcast, where we talk about sports and parenting and the intersection between sports and parenting. Hosted by best-selling author Jeff Perlman.
And Catherine Perlman, also known as the family coach.
Can't you just say the family coach?
Well, there's my ode to Run DMC.
Oh, joy. Okay. On this week's podcast, we are going to talk about hugging and...
We're hugging right now. You can't see, but we are hugging.
No, we're not. Overprotective parents and Dunkin' Donuts.
That sounds good. Yeah. And our guest this week is one of my favorites, Sage Steele, the host of ESPN and ABC's NBA Countdown. And a woman, and this is unbelievable, has never seen one episode of Different Strokes.
Seriously. Well, now she has.
I know, that's pretty messed up. That's messed up. But before we begin this show and talk more about Different Strokes, we're sponsored by B2 Design. B2 Design takes pride in planning, strategizing, and organizing your online content to make your message clear and concise. B2 Design works with clients of all sizes. Family Coach uses B2 Design to create her website and logo. How are you feeling about it today?
Still love it.
And my website was also designed by B2 Design. Are you feeling any worse about it?
Nope.
Still love it?
Yep.
For more information on building a beautiful new website or updating an old one, get in touch with MC Brant Beaupre at brant@b2twodesign.net.
So what's up this week, girl?
So, I'm going to go sports a little here. I was on ESPN, browsing ESPN.com, browsing a little bit, and a lot of talk about Alex Rodriguez, one of my least favorite players I've ever covered, New York Yankees. He's now, A-Rod is now 41 years old. He's making $21 million this season. He's at the toward the end of the worst contract, definitely in the history of Major League Baseball. And over his past 95 games, dating back to last year, he's hitting .204, 17 homers, 49 RBIs, and 333
at-bats. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And I know, I'm sorry. And I read a quote from him today because he sucks. He absolutely sucks. And he's 41 and he's injured and he just is terrible. And his quote was, "You haven't heard the last of me." And here's my quote back to him. "I sure freaking hope I have heard the last of you." The guy, it just drives me crazy. The amount of the guys who cheat and have gotten away with it. And he's a big one. He cheated. He was caught. He was embarrassed. He's still making his money. He's still getting paid by the Yankees. "We haven't heard the last of you." Like, what you've done over the years in baseball hasn't been just total BS. Like, that you haven't cheated the game, that you haven't cheated the record book.
What's the consequences?
There are no consequences.
Exactly.
It's
so
embarrassing, but it's horrible. And I really, Mark McGwire is a hitting coach in Major League Baseball. Barry Bonds is a hitting coach in Major League Baseball. One day, A-Rod will be a hitting coach in Major League Baseball. And, meanwhile, Pete Rose can't get a sniff at the Hall of Fame. And Pete Rose is a slimy, slimy guy. And I never thought he belonged in the Hall of Fame. But the idea that these guys are eligible, when they just destroy the record book by taking drugs that were illegal in the United States of America, drives me crazy. And the reason I bring it up here, because here we are talking on the Sports Parent about role models, about kids. And I just think this guy, Alex Rodriguez, is the worst role model we've had in sports in a long time.
Well, I don't know, but I don't know if I would say that. But I do think, when I talk to parents about working on their kids' behavior or the problems that they're having, I say, well, what do you do when he, throws his toy? Nothing. I don't know what to do. Or what do you do when he hits his brother? I say, don't hit his brother. But then nothing, right? So consequences actually change the action. So for me, I don't think it's A-Rod's problem. I think it's...
He's a cheater. He cheated.
So what? Who cares?
I care. Because I actually love baseball.
Yeah, but you have no say. Like, he still gets his $21 million. He's still going to be the pitching coach or whatever coach.
Oh, my God.
Batting coach.
That was a bad moment right there.
Catcher coach. He's an outfielder.
The big guy.
He's an outfielder, right?
Oh, my God. Not? Stop. This is just the parent right now, not the sports parent. But we're not editing this out. Do not edit this out.
So what position did he play?
Well, now he's just a DH, but he was a shortstop and then a third baseman for a long time.
As you know. It's like the outfield. Yeah, it's just the infield.
Whatever.
Okay. Well,
you sound like my mom. Who are you doing this? Is it Brett Favre or Brett Favre? Who's the book on?
I can't remember. I know who he is. My point is...
You sound like you need a hug.
Just because you think, well, damn him, but the real consequences aren't, he doesn't really care about your opinion. He cares about his $21 million.
I think he actually does care about, maybe not my opinion specifically, but I think he does care about people's opinions and he does care about how he's seen. He's been shown over the years to be incredibly thin-skinned and incredibly aware of how people feel. And here's how I feel. You're a fraud, you're a disgrace, and I look forward to the day I no longer see you play Major League Baseball. Let's talk hugging.
All right, then. Well, I think this is a bit of a hot topic, And I wrote a column about this, and recently a mom friend of mine asked me what I thought about hugging. So in some cultures and in just some families in general, hugging is expected. You know, your grandparents show up at the house, you get up and you go give them a hug. Everybody's leaving, you go give, you know, Uncle Todd a hug. And
that's a nice shout out to actually the real Uncle Todd.
Well, he's cousin Todd. Yeah. But anyway, you're expected to give a hug. And I've really thought a lot about this because we have one child who is very anti-hugging. In the beginning, I felt like we shouldn't make our kids hug other people because I could see the discomfort. And it wasn't like she picked and chose who she didn't want to hug. She really universally, even her best friends, she did not want to be touched. So I was really against making kids hug. And over time, I've evolved to even more of a strong stance on it. But before I tell you what my thoughts are about that, what do you think?
So you're basically the leader of the anti-hugging movement, the growing ever.
I am.
You're going to lead a march.
Much to the
UN.
Chagrin of many grandparents, you know.
Well, here's what I think. I don't disagree with you that Casey doesn't, like, I used to hate, and God bless them all, but I grew up in the Havara, right?
Oh, how about the disgusting hug I got from your Havara member at our wedding? No, thank you.
It was a little sweaty. But I used to have to hug these people, and I hated it. I was so uncomfortable with it. And, oh, look who it is. It's Mrs. So-and-so, and I'd have to hug, and I really hated that to the point where I would hide behind my parents. I do not believe in thrusting my children into that situation. I think it's okay to say, you know, she isn't ready for that comfortable hugging. She doesn't like hugging. If the person doesn't like it, tough. I do think with grandparents, even with cousins, I think it's okay to say, all right, look, Casey, I know you don't feel comfortable about hugging, but this is a situation where it's just not worth hurting feelings. And if you can suck it up and hug grandma, it might be good for all parties.
Right. Well, so I am so glad you just said that.
Well, it's about time you came around on it.
No, I'm not coming around. And I think, you know, a couple of weeks back, we talked about the swimmer rapist from Stanford. Mm-hmm. And I think the message to girls, especially, but also to boys, is when you make them hug grandpa, is override your natural sensor of discomfort or listening to what you think is right. Because a grown-up is telling you that you should do this. And I just think that sets girls up to disregard some really important cues or to be able to stand up for themselves and their bodies and say, no, I don't want that hug. And? What do you have to say about that?
No, I think I don't disagree with you. I think that's okay. And I actually think you know, it's weird. We have a daughter who's growing up very quickly, you know, and she's 12 turning 13. And you do start to think about all the awkward social situations she's about to come into, you know, and people are going to start treating her more as a woman than they do a girl. And inside her mind, she's still a girl. You know, she is. She's still a kid, but people are going to start thinking of her more as not just a kid. And I don't think it's so bad. I think I was wrong on this. I don't think it's bad to allow your kid to say, no, that's not me. That's just not me. I don't do it. And not making her feel like some sort of pariah for being that way. So yeah. I'm with you.
I agree with that. And I just want to say one last point, that a lot of times people tell me, well, okay, fine. They don't have to hug everybody, but just close family. But the thing is, not that I think everyone's a child molester, but very often it's a person who's close to the child.
Yeah, but I still maintain grandma, grandpa, whatever, cousin Todd, like people we see who are close to. I don't think it's wrong to telling your kid on the side, look, it's if you can hug these people, it might be.
How would you feel if you told her to hug cousin so-and-so and you found out 20 years later that person was
molesting
her?
Well, I wouldn't feel good if that person was even in my house. So,
well, wouldn't you feel terrible that you encouraged her to be put her body close to somebody who she felt uncomfortable with?
How would I feel if my kid sits in a seat and I found out there was a tack in the seat? Like these things, it is possible that out there somewhere there are people who are pedophiles and rapists, undoubtedly. I'm not planning my life. I'm not basing my life off of, oh, maybe that person is.
I agree. I just want to trust my kids' instincts. That's all.
That's fair enough.
All right. Well, what do you got going on in the news?
Very interesting story from the Desert News in Salt Lake City, Utah, a place I have never been except the airport. Families grapple with the pressure to play youth sports on Sunday. And it's a piece about, you know, it's obviously Salt Lake City, a lot of Mormons, LDS. And it's a piece about an increasing number of LDS parents who are conflicted about what to do, because we have at the same time here this steadfast religious belief. And we also have, as we've talked about a lot in the show, the rise of sports, where you have to play sports and your team isn't just going to, you're not just going to play Tuesdays anymore. You're going to play Tuesdays and Sundays. And here, you know, I guess in New York, maybe it wasn't a big deal, maybe in Southern California, but here in Utah, you have a lot of families that are really conflicted. And, you know, there's one parent, one kid here, Meg, and she showed up on Sunday morning for the team breakfast. And then the dad said, we walked out with everyone, wished them good luck, and we drove to church. And I got to say, you know, I'm not religious. You probably know that.
Yep.
And I struggle a lot with religion. But I say bravo here. You know, I used to like when I was growing up and Sundays meant something. And it was because it was a religious thing in the air, but it wasn't religion in our house. It was a Sunday was family time, right? There were never sports on Sunday when I grew up. There were no league sports on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
You would stay home and watch a game together, but you weren't out playing on Sundays. And I sort of like that. And I feel like there are too many games, too many practices, too many days where you have to be somewhere,
Yeah.
And you and I are both huge fans of the Sunday drive. Let's go get Sunday ice cream. Let's go to the farmer's market on Sunday.
Just having family day.
And it doesn't happen anymore nearly as much, and it drives me crazy. So bravo, bravo to LDS.
Well, I think it's also just not an issue about Sunday. I mean, I feel like our...
Oh, it is.
Our week... No, it's not. Our weeknights, I mean, to get a dinner for the four of us at home before 7:45 is, you know, almost impossible, and I hate that.
Yep.
I want my kids to play sports, but I absolutely hate that. We used to play sports at 4 o'clock.
Right.
We were home by 6.
Right. Yeah. I agree with you 100%. It's gone way too far. Way too far. And you know what the funny thing is? One more thing. If you talk to most professional, as Sean Green said a few weeks ago, if you talk to most professional athletes or former professional athletes, they actually agree with us. It's not like the pro athletes are like, no, you need to get out there 6 days a week. Most pro athletes are like, you know what? When I was growing up, I played 3 days a week and I was riding my bike the other days.
So. Because they could see you could do that and still be successful.
Yep.
But I wonder in 20 years if that's possible.
I know. I don't know. Because Mike Trout has a totally different experience growing up than Sean Green did.
Yeah.
What else you got, Catherine?
Well, okay. A recent study published in the Journal of Personality. I just absolutely love that there's a Journal of Personality.
Could I be in it?
Sure.
Yes.
Put you on the couch. Studied overbearing parents over the course of 5 years. And what they found is that children with intrusive parents were more likely to be overcritical of themselves, and the tendency increased over the years. There's also a high level of self-criticism that correlated with higher levels of depression and anxiety. And another study had similar findings that said that college students with helicopter parents had a hard time believing in their own ability to accomplish goals. They were more dependent on others, had poor coping strategies, and didn't have soft skills like responsibility or conscientiousness throughout college. And I think that this is a growing story about helicopter parents. There's kind of like a bad rap about helicopter parents, but I think research is now starting to come out, which is showing that there is a negative effect. We've kind of swung too far in the other direction, and by the time the kids get to college, there's a negative issue that they're not going to be so quick to drop.
I just think we all need to chill. I really do.
That's the motto. We all just need to chill.
You know what I mean, though? Like, parenting is gone. This is what I used to say. When we used to drop the kids off at awesome Ward Elementary School in New Rochelle, there'd be a bunch of us standing in the courtyard, and you went to Bucknell, not a great college. I went to Delaware, the Harvard of
but
Delaware.
But you did just look up what number college Bucknell was.
Your mic isn't working. And I have to make my point. It's very important. You went to Bucknell. Yeah, I went to Delaware. There'd be someone there who went to Harvard. There'd be someone who didn't go to college at all. And we all ended up in the same courtyard, you know, in New Rochelle. We are so concerned and so involved about what our parents or what our kids are doing. And how come this teacher doesn't appreciate my kid's talent? And you need to do more homework. And I'm getting you a tutor. You need a tutor, an after-school tutor. So after sports, you need a tutor for an hour. We just need to calm the hell down. And I'm going to tell you something right now, and I mean it.
Yes.
I don't care if my kid, our kids, go to Stanford or UCLA or Saddleback Community College. If they are happy with their lives, if they feel good about themselves, and if they are concerned with sort of making a difference and have some empathy about them, I'm totally cool with it. And I'm sick and tired of this BS, this push for our kids to be something. It drives me crazy.
Well, I totally agree with you.
I know you do.
I do. I really do. I mean, I don't want to sacrifice my kids' entire childhood building them up so they get into the best college so that somehow being in the best college makes them successful and happy in life. I don't think it does. But I do think sometimes I worry that my philosophy or our philosophy sets our kids up for failure in ways that we have no idea at this point. Just like helicopter parenting to some people probably seemed like a good idea at the beginning. Like, our generation grew up with parents who are a lot less involved. And I think the backlash to that was that our generation became parents that were more involved. They missed their parents in their lives, and they wanted to do that for their kids, but they went too far. So I'm wondering sometimes if, like, okay, so I say, like, my kids are not going to play, you know, sports 5 days a week, or they're not going to do XYZ in the summer, or we're going to take our kids out of school for family trips or whatever it may be, that somewhere, you know, in 20 years from now, we're going to say, you know what, we made a mistake. We shouldn't have done that.
I you just saw me make a face. I can't even agree with that slightly. And here's why. Like, what does it all mean? Like, all right, so our kid, you use the word our failure, you know, like our kid, you don't want your kid to be a failure. Like, I don't even know what that means. You know, like, there are people we know who were high achievers, super high achievers, and are miserable, right? Like, miserable people don't like their lives, haven't liked their careers, right, are unhappy, are divorced, whatever. Like, this whole even idea of, like, so I'm actually literally talking to my hands here. I'm so into this. Like, this idea that there's, like, this thing that's success and this thing. Like, we're both in our mid-40s now. Life flies by. You know, I can't believe I'm here. And to think that, like, I could have gone to law school like my mom wanted me to, or I could have gone to medical school, so that would have been a disaster, but I could have gone to medical school. And I wanted to be a sports writer. I wanted to have fun. I wanted to do something I enjoy. And I don't make as much money as the guy across the street. You know, I don't have the prestige of other professions, but I'm happy. And I just think, like, that's what counts. And
I hope that our choices are less important for the kids, but that they do see that you and I have both made choices so that we can have a family life, so we can be home with our kids, so that we can travel or, you know, do the things that we think are important. And I hope that, you know, that does give them the same opportunities that we've had to make this life that we really enjoy.
I just want to make one more point that I think people way too often forget, which is childhood is a blink. It's a freaking blink. It goes by so quickly. And I get emotional talking about this. Like, I want to give my kids the trips to the national park. I want to take those drives. I want them to see things. They could miss a stupid baseball game. They don't need to play every season a sport. We can go on Sunday and drive somewhere and try the best ice cream in the state because it's just something to do that's different. I want them to enjoy their childhoods while they have it, because once it's over, it's gone, and you never have that innocence and that sort of leisurely ability again in your life.
Well said, Early.
Thanks, Catherine. Next up, of course, is our interview with Sage Steele.
But first, how about a brief ad about my Tower Garden by Juice Plus?
Man, you love this thing.
I do love this thing. If you haven't heard, the Tower Garden is a vertical aeroponic garden. It's all the joy of gardening without any of the hassle. It uses recycled water, which is great in places where there's a drought, like in California. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take up any room. It has a very pleasant waterfall sound.
I've seen a rainbow yesterday.
The lettuce and vegetables grow faster than they do in the ground. And I will say that our lettuce, which we had for dinner last night, was delicious, fully organic. Mm-hmm. If you want to learn more about the absolutely amazing Tower Garden, contact Lisa Blaisdell by checking out her Tower Garden website at LisaBlaisdell.towergarden.com. And don't forget to mention The Sports Parent to receive 5 free seedlings with your order of a Tower Garden.
Will you please, at some point in the show, let me wrap the entirety of Left Eye's Waterfalls wrap? Maybe in the future, TLC?
I'll think about it.
Our guest for this week on the interview is Sage Steele, who you best know as a host of NBA Countdown on ESPN and ABC. She's a former Army brat. She's a graduate of Indiana. And Sage, before we do anything, I have to ask you a very important question, which is Hall & Oates or Elton John? If you had to see one in concert, who do you see?
Oh, I mean, I love them both. Gosh, 80s. I think I would say, just because of the performance he would put on, would be Elton John.
Oh, my
God. Just
the
showman.
I need to get in the water on that one.
I think we're tied now on that question.
Yeah.
So, Sage, I'm kind of wondering, NBA, before we get into deeper issues, long NBA season, tons of games, the thing ends. I know it's great, NBA Finals, exciting, LeBron, exciting. Do you just take, like, a super, super long nap now?
Yeah, well, break, but not nap, and not enough sleep still. I need it. I look like hell. This is what happens. I mean, you know, it's 8 weeks of the playoffs. It's way too long, in my opinion. And so I've been really going since before the playoffs began. I say April 1st is when I just say goodbye to my family, which always feels good, you know, guilt. But anyway, I was over at a friend's house for a minute tonight because our washing machine broke, and we have, you know, 10 people coming to my house tomorrow, and the sheets are dirty. So, you know, the glamorous life that I lead. And they were like, hey, what do you think about the draft? And I said, what draft?
Like, oh, it's awesome.
I'm not thinking.
I do not care. I got The finals ended late Sunday night. I had to do something in LA Monday, 6 a.m. I got home on Tuesday, and the draft was Thursday, and I could not have cared less. I will care at some point, and I'll catch up, but my brain just can't really handle it after not just the finals, but all the playoffs. Obviously, pressure in the finals is you know, peak, and I had such a blast doing it, though, that I figure you can sleep when you die. I mean, it was really, really fun, but I'm tired, and I'm kind of useless, and as you guys know, kind of brain dead.
I just want to say, Sage, we're kind of impressed because we have a, I don't know if we both do, but I definitely do. I feel like if no one has slept on the sheets in the guest room for more than like 3 weeks, you can leave them on.
I totally disagree. I want to say that for the record publicly. I wash the sheets.
That's your rule?
3 weeks. If the last visitor was more than 3 weeks ago and you have not changed the sheets, the new people are not going to get the germs from the last visitors. It's just factually impossible.
At that point, it's just disintegrate. Oh my gosh, that's disgusting. I'm never coming to your house.
Okay, and I want to assure you that he's not in charge of the clean sheets department.
Okay, thank you, Catherine.
Oh my goodness. Okay, now that he's embarrassed us publicly. So I have a question for you. So you're a working mom and you have a stay-at-home husband. I'm very curious what that's like in terms of the dynamic between you and how you make it work.
Well, you know, we've just really figured it out at this point. It's been 14 years. Our kids are 14, 12, and 10, and I can't believe it. One of the few things I'm okay patting myself on the back for, we are a well-oiled machine here at home. And, you know, my schedule dominates, obviously, and you know, there's no holidays, there's no birthdays, there's no breaks at certain times, whether it's Christmas Day or, you know, a kid's birthday, like mom has to work. For years, I beat myself up about it, years. I still do a little bit, but not quite as much. I've had to let go and realize, hey, like, yes, I'm missing some things, but I'm there for a whole lot. And I'm providing for my family. And also showing an example to my girls and my son that it doesn't really matter who's the breadwinner in the house, as long as someone is working and supporting. And I mean, I don't know, like, this is just my dream, and I happen to have been able to achieve it. Wouldn't have been able to do so without my husband's sacrifice. And you know, it's not always been easy for him. Like, I career-wise, he gave up a really good career. I always say he's the smart one in the relationship. He has 2 degrees, and I barely got one. They just kicked me out because they couldn't handle it. They're like, just give her the degree and get her out of here. So, I don't know. I wouldn't have made it without him. But I also now know that, like, it did take. If you know me, I have trouble accepting compliments. I don't say many, you know, braggy things about myself, but I can, recently I've had to really just acknowledge and say, you know what, you've done a good job, because I would bawl when I would miss things. 1 year I had such guilt. I was hosting SportsCenter, you know, daytime, you know, 5 days a week. Somehow I was a room mom for all 3 kids at once, kindergarten, second grade, and fourth grade. And, you know, baking cookies and from scratch. I couldn't go buy them, God forbid. Like, I just was killing myself to do everything that the other mothers who stayed home were able to do. And I feel like I went above and beyond, and I have zero regrets. I just finally realized, you know what, you've done your best, and you continue to do your best, and it's not perfect. But hopefully I'm showing them a good example that I've gone after my dream, but still been able to be home for them. And sacrificed a lot as well. But I just think we're a really good team. It's been a tough couple years. Just finished my 3rd year on NBA Countdown. And the first year we were in Connecticut, and I traveled cross country once a week, you know, red eyes. And I don't know. Like, I feel very fortunate to have not had to choose between a career and family. And that took my husband's sacrifice, but mine as well. And it's the one thing I know that I've done well in my life.
Well, I really relate to the idea of being a role model for your girls. And I feel this way for my son as well, but that, you know, you're saying you're going after your dreams, you're working hard, you're achieving, you know, at a very high level. And I think that my mother worked, and I feel like that's one of the reasons why I always assumed I would work. Like, I'd go to college, I'd get a job. Like, that's what I was doing. But I also really relate to you saying that you were the, I mean, I can't even, I don't know how you did it, that you were the room mom for three kids. And then, of course, I would never go to the store and buy, you know, the cookies. I have to make the cookies. And I did, I just want to give you a shout out. I did see your amazing cupcakes on Instagram.
Thank you.
That you made, I think, for your daughter's sleepover or something. But I think sometimes that full-time working mothers, they have this real-time struggle of not feeling like they're, you know, they can do 100% at work and 100% at home. So I'm kind of wondering, it sounds like a little bit of that is being the super mom at home, but how else do you manage that push and pull between being there at home as much as you can? And are you exhausted on the weekends and, you know, being 100% at work?
Yeah, I mean, I'm exhausted all the time, which makes me sad because I mean, I love my bed. I have a great new mattress. I really want to be in it more, and I'm not being dirty. I just want to sleep. It's a fact. Like, I miss it, and I know that I would not be aging as quickly if I slept more. But I don't, you know, I don't want to miss out when I am home. You know, now then when I leave, I go on the road, and it's a different kind of exhaustion and stress, and you know, I'm in hotels and eating bad food, and like, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I have actually said recently, throw the word balance out of my vocabulary, because that that connotates equality, right? I am not equal or equally balanced in anything in my life. So I'm letting go of trying to be that perfect everything, because I realize I can't, and it's exhausting.
Yeah.
But I've done it for everything in my life. I mean, since I was a kid, all the way up till now, and now I'm 43. I'm like, I can't do this. So I'm just trying to let go. You do your best. The guilt is just, you know, that's my own fault. No one put the guilt on me except me.
Right.
So now, I mean, I'm kind of taking ownership. It's my own fault if I'm up at 1 a.m. making cookies. Now, I like it. And I will say, whenever I leave town, I try to make banana bread, because I feel like in the mornings when they get up for school, and I'm not there, and this is when I get emotional, and I'm not there, at least I'm kind of there, because my really good banana bread is there, and they say, see, mom cares. We love this bread, and she stayed up to make it. And so maybe it is this, again, trying to prove subconsciously that, look what a great mom I am. Even when I am leaving town, they're going to have banana bread, because they'll feel the love in the morning before they go to school, even though I can't hug them. So
I love that.
But to what end, you know? I mean, I don't know. That's me. My mom yells at me. She's like, stop it. You're providing, you're doing all this. And she's right. But it means something to me that there's a little piece of me there, even though I'm missing, you know, my daughter's presentation on her Bengal tigers for her fourth grade class.
I think you do the things that are meaningful to you. And I agree, looking from the outside, somebody else would make different choices than I make. Someone else would make different choices than you would make. But in order for you to do what you do, you need to make that banana bread. And you may sometimes need to be up till 2 a.m. to make that banana bread. But then when you're on the plane the next day, you feel ready to do your job. And I think that's really important.
I think that our kids, especially now at the age my kids are at, like, they'll remember this. And it isn't about, oh, my God, mom was so great because the banana bread. No, it's just going the extra mile. And you know what? I'll never regret staying up and making the banana bread. I might if I don't take those extra little steps. Not about banana bread per se, but just in general. Like, I don't ever think you regret going the extra mile. And so why not? And someday in a couple years, they're not going to be around me to make banana bread. They're going to be in college, and they're going to be long gone. So, but I have started to really try to let go, because it does take away when you're that exhausted. I mean, somehow I'm able to perk up when the lights come on. And ready or not, we're on live national TV. You better go. Now, it doesn't mean I'm not checking my cell phone in commercial breaks to make sure, you know, if my one daughter or son writes me, one of the girls, then I want to write them back, because I might be working, but look, I'm still here. So it's a disease, it's a sickness, but I've kind of owned my crazy. Finally, I've just owned it. This is what makes me happy, is to feel like I'm kind of there, even if I'm not. But then I have 4 months off in the summer. I mean, I pick up a few things, because I don't think it's healthy or smart business-wise to disappear for 4 months. But now I'm home, and as much as they complain that I wasn't there, last day of school, et cetera, guess what? Now they're complaining because I'm on them for not cleaning their rooms. So how quickly they forget, you know?
Is there a readjustment period that you have to go through after a season? Is there a, you know, we've had times where I've been on the road for a bunch of weeks and I come back and you can kind of, it's like, hey, he's back. And then it's like, oh, he's back.
Reintegration is
the reintegration. Do you have that as well? Yeah, you do.
Almost more so this year than ever before. I don't know if it's because they're a year older and I have, you know, a teenage daughter. And I mean, the first night, you know, my husband is so great. He went out and got one of my favorite cuts of meat. We had this great steak dinner and all this fat and shrimp and like so nice. Welcome home, Mom. And like halfway through dinner, I'm like, good God in heaven, pour me another glass of wine. Like my head hurts. And so like, I'm with people and I'm working and it's chaos, but in my hotel room at night, I'm alone. You know, I'm in my room alone. I'm alone a lot on the road, much to my chagrin. So then when you come home and it's madness, I'm like, oh gosh, I forgot how to be a patient parent who can, you know, kind of edit out the chaos in my head, you know, and multitask. So this year more than ever, I really felt like, whoa, I need to take a deep breath and readjust. And my husband looked at me like, uh-huh, yeah, yeah, where you been? You know?
Right. Do your kids care about what you do? Like, are you a cooler mom than the mom who is the local librarian or the mom who stays at home, or do they just don't care at all?
You know what? Recently, it's changed. It's interesting because this is all they've ever known. I mean, one of my favorite pictures is my daughter. My oldest started walking at 9 months old. And so, yeah, way too early. And so I remember she's this little peanut standing in front of the TV pointing at me like she recognized me. So which I just, you know, my husband sent me the picture at work and, well, was email around in 2002? I don't know. He sent me the picture because I'm always like, oh, what am I missing? Am I missing her first steps? And I thought, oh my gosh, look. So she was 9 months old and pointing at me on TV. Like I that's all they've known is me being on TV. But all of a sudden, especially with boys and my son for sure, because all three are really big into sports and very, very, very knowledgeable about all sports, especially the NBA. Good, sometimes that's good. Sometimes that's not. When they critique me, when I make a mistake on TV, but like, especially with my oldest and some of the cute boys at school who will say things now and maybe get more attention or, you know, all of a sudden but then I get the questions like, so Mom, are you famous? Because so-and-so said that you're famous. And I mean, you're just my mom, but are you, like, how do you answer that? You know? So it's awkward in a way because it was never ever an issue or a topic. And then all of a sudden, because of their friends and their peers, and even some teachers, to be honest with you, it's like, oh God, I don't want to be anyone different, but I get it. And it's also, I don't know. It's right now they think it's cool. Tomorrow they might not, but for today,
I think it's okay. Cool.
Yeah. We think it's cool. We think it's cool.
I don't want to be different from any other mom, you know, obviously, and especially once the playoffs began and a lot more eyes come on. And then all of a sudden it's, you know, I went to the gym today and all of a sudden we've only been here 2 years. And this year, for some reason, right after the finals, now even more people are. So I've never been really good at that because I feel awkward and I get embarrassed. And I'm so flattered every time, every single time. But I just feel like I just don't want to be any different from anybody else. Cause then, I mean, you know, how women are, Catherine, like, I mean, women are tough enough. And then now they're giving me dirty looks. I'm like, ah, like I can't win, you know?
Yeah. You got to find the other full-time working moms. That's the problem.
By the way, and in our old neighborhood in Connecticut, there were like 2.5 of us out of like 90 homes of the women who worked. And wow. Oh my gosh, the stay-at-home moms were so, not all of them, but were so not nice. And I was devastated by it. And then one time someone sent out an email, accidentally a reply all. She was a head of the PTO. And accidentally a reply all instead of just to one or two people. And just said, you know, if these working moms would just take some time out for their children, maybe. And I was like, oh. So I replied all back, of course.
Oh, that's awesome. Wait, what'd you write?
I'm not going to tell you.
But you know what? The thing is, I feel like it really is a symbiotic relationship. And there's room for the full-time working moms to fully appreciate what the PTA moms and the stay-at-home moms do. Yes. And also, I think that it can go both ways. You know, I think we come into the classroom and we're role models. And I think that there's a lot going both directions. I just think it would be nicer if we could live up to our potential in that manner.
I agree. I totally agree. I think I was just so surprised and hurt because I'm looking at them with envy. Like, oh gosh, you can be in all your kids' classrooms. And like, I didn't have many, you know, close friendships in Connecticut because of just the push and pull, and I had no time, and they had friendships, but they also felt like, okay, they weren't able to use their degrees, and they felt that, like, they lost their identity, which is a major issue, man or woman, if you're staying home. So, but I will say this, I do believe that, and this is, you know, neither here nor there, I guess, but I get so much more done when I'm working, when I'm busy. I mean, my to-do list, like, I just feel like a badass half the time at the end of the day, because I'm like, wow, I did this, 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 and I was on TV. Because it's not going to get done if you don't find a way to do it all. And I now it's my off time, and I'm like, oh gosh, I am so, I'm getting nothing done. I need to have more on my plate in order to be efficient. So, you know what, though, to your point, I've talked about this a lot recently, whether I've been, you know, speaking or privately or publicly. I'm really over the whole women not supporting women thing. I'm sick of it, and I'm calling people out on it because we complain and bitch and moan about men not supporting women and the glass ceiling. But then when it comes to each other, what do? The mean girls that my daughter's experiencing at 14 continues at 44, and I think it's pathetic. So we just all need to all support each other and look at ourselves in the mirror before we, you know, start yelling at the guys. Not that men can't, you know, be better in that area as well, but let's just support each other. We're kind of amazing, you know?
Yep.
Sage, but I'm going to go into our weekly five questions, but before I do, can you hook us up with some banana bread? Is that possible?
Well, do you like it with chocolate chips, or I put dried cranberries in? It depends what you like.
Chocolate.
Yeah.
Chocolate.
Whatever you like.
I did send you the box set of Different Strokes season 3, so let's not forget that, okay?
Wait, well, yeah, no, absolutely, number one. And number two, here's the thing. I will send you banana bread if you promise to change the sheets when I deliver it.
Yes.
Yeah, done. Deal. All right, Sage, five questions. Question number one. You like candy, Swedish Fish or Reese's Peanut Butter Cups?
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, no doubt.
Yeah, of course. All right. Sage, you joined ESPN in 2007. Which of these men was not on an NBA roster in 2007? Eddie Gill, Fred Jones, Louis Hanner, Keith Langford.
Oh my gosh.
Read the names.
I have no idea.
Eddie Gill.
D.
Keith Langford would be incorrect. It was Louis Hanner who beat me up in seventh grade.
like eeny, meeny, miny, moco.
Yeah. Sage, you have, I read you have James Taylor on your iPod. Can you please sing us a line from a James Taylor song of your choice?
See, I need you to give me the key to get me going here.
Go ahead.
Oh my God, I can't even sing a note. You could say a line. We'll go with that.
Oh, I've seen.
Fire and I've seen rain.
Perfect.
Wait, what's the next word? How about Sunny you got days. A friend? Because that was my high school graduation song, was You've Got a Friend, even though I didn't have any friends.
Aww. We'll be your friend.
That's so sad. Will you be my friends now? Okay,
we'll be your friend. We'll be your friends.
Especially after the banana bread.
I also have like Biggie Smalls. I also have like Tupac. So, I mean, come on. I'm versatile here.
Yeah, no, I respect that. But James Taylor stuck out there. Question number four. Who wins in a 12-round boxing match between you and Linda Cohn, and how long does it go?
See, here's the thing. I think Linda is tougher. Linda is gritty and tougher than me, totally. But I got a really big height and arm length advantage. So I think that I could hold her off because of my reach. Although I better make it quick and like swipe the knee or something like in Karate Kid. I'd say it'd probably go, it might go like 9 or 10 rounds. And I love you, Linda, but I'd take you down.
Sage Steele just set you a kick your ass, Linda Cohn. And the last question.
And by the way, and Linda knows this, since Linda came on the air 20 years ago, I have worshipped the ground she walks on. You talk about tough and putting up with a lot. That girl is at the top of the list. So
yes, she's one of the greats. And question number five, simple one. Who are the three greatest basketball players you've ever seen live?
Live? Mm-hmm. Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so putting all bias aside, yeah. Michael Jordan, LeBron James. I feel like it's tough because he's still playing and Michael's, yeah. But my third one, I don't know that everyone would agree, but it's my heart. It's Reggie Miller.
See, I thought you were going to say Calbert Cheney, and I would have to.
No, I'm not going to Indiana. Well, if anything, I would go Damon Bailey.
Oh yeah, he was
from. Good. From my way, way back days when all of us at IU had crushes on Damon Bailey. You remember him, right?
Man, the guy was a great high school legend in Indiana.
I know you remember him for sure. And Bob Knight, you know, recruited him and signed him in like seventh grade, right? Yeah.
Catherine, you remember Damon Bailey?
Oh, yeah.
Big fan. Big fan. The old Bailster. Big fan.
Mm-hmm. Bailster.
Sage, we cannot thank you enough for joining us.
By the way, I'm terrible at talking in sound bites. I took up like 90% of your podcast. I'm sorry. So train me better on sound bites, okay? I'm sorry.
No,
that was awesome.
You should speak. We talk all the time. Yeah. We needed you.
Also, we want to make you feel, we want to butter you up so when you send us the banana bread, it's nice and fresh. you can follow Sage Steele on Twitter at Sage Steele, on Instagram at Sage Steele. And Sage, seriously, one of my all-time favorites, one of the great quazzes of all time. And now a huge fan of Different Strokes. So thank you for joining us on the
Sports Parent. Thanks to you. And thank you for not judging me because I was a child of the 80s and 70s, but I lived out of country and I was clueless. So Jeff Perlman has helped make me relevant with that. And by the way, thank you for having me on. I know you could have had a million people on and we need to hang out. We need to hang out and eat bad food and drink wine and talk about our kids.
And I'll be your working mommy friend. It's on.
Okay, we're friends, right? You promise?
Total friends now.
Thank you, guys.
All right, thanks, Sage. We appreciate it.
Bye.
So despite the fact that Sage has never watched Different Strokes, great, right?
She was lovely. And I actually felt like even though she has much more high-power career than me, she's on television, she travels a lot, I felt like everything she said about being a full-time working mom mirrored everything that I feel on a regular basis.
Yeah, she's just the best. And that actually may have been our best interview so far in our young podcast.
And I just want to say, because you lie, I would never, ever let someone sleep in our guest room without changing the sheets.
Yes, you would.
And no, I wouldn't. And I wouldn't even share a pillowcase with you, my adored husband. So, Sage, you can come to our house, and I will promise you there will be clean sheets.
I think it's good that you were not here for my nap today.
Okay, you better not have slept in my pillow.
So now, as we do every week, we're here for the quick one-minute wrap-up debate. Today's a heated one. It's really tough. We've been debating this for a long time. Not really. The debate is Starbucks versus Dunkin' Donuts, which there are, like, no Dunkin' Donuts on the West Coast, which sucks.
So, there's no recently. They just opened.
Yeah, I know, but not many.
Okay.
I'm going first?
Yep, you're going first.
Dunkin' Donuts, you ready?
Yep.
All right. Coffee. It doesn't matter. It's all the same. Jelly, glaze, Boston cream. I mean, the donuts at Dunkin' Donuts are legit. And why are they legit? Because they're donuts, and donuts are delicious. And I don't care what the coffee tastes like. It's fine. And they have decaf ice, which you like. So Dunkin' Donuts, great food. Have you ever looked at the case in Starbucks at that food? The stuff could walk. It's so moldy. It just sits there, and it's lumpy, and it's crappy. Nobody wants to eat anything that's been sitting behind a glass case for 5 days. It just sucks. Dunkin' Donuts, awesome.
That was, like, the weakest job on Dunkin'
Donuts. You can't say that until after you do your thing. Are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
Go.
Okay. Starbucks has better coffee. And actually, yes, that does matter. People care about their coffee. And Dunkin' Donuts is just weak, watery coffee. They have delicious treats like cake pops. They have scones, little yummy vanilla scones. They have free Wi-Fi and outlets, which, believe me, is very important.
So is Dunkin' Donuts.
No, they don't. They have very friendly staff. They have soy milk, almond milk, and coconut. And for people like me who don't drink regular milk, that's important. They make the drink just as you like it. If you don't like the way they make it, they'll remake it for you. And you know what? There's just as much moldy crumbs and nastiness in Dunkin' Donuts.
Everything you just said, they do at Dunkin' Donuts too.
No.
Everything.
They don't. Okay. So let us know who you think won this debate. I know it was me. Tweet us at The Family Coach or at Jeff Perlman. Use the hashtag TheSportsParent so we can see your comments. Find us on Facebook at Jeff Perlman, and you can find Catherine at The Family Coach. We'll put the links up and information about topics we discuss in the show on our website, thesportsparentpodcast.com. Jeff's website is www.jeffperlman.com, and you can check out his amazing blog and take a look at his quaz, which is Jeff's Q&A series.
Check out Catherine's website at thefamilycoach.com. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to The Sports Parent on iTunes so you don't miss an episode. And while I hate begging, or I'll beg real quick.
Please.
If you like our show, please, Mr. Smith, go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a review. It's easy to do. You search iTunes for The Sports Parent. You click on the podcast, not the individual episode. And when it comes up, you should see details next to the logo. Next to the details, it should say reviews and ratings. Click on that heading, add a comment, and just give us a 5-star rating. We really need this thing to do well. We're in our closet. We're dressed like crap. It's hot as hell in here. Get me out of here, please. Also, if there are topics you'd like us to discuss in the show, send an email to Catherine with a C Catherine@thefamilycoach.com. Audio production assistant from the great Andrew Perella. Music from the fantastic MC White Owl and Static Selecta. Until next week's episode of The Sports Parent, win or lose, take your kids for ice cream after the game.